You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
Want to be in the know for all things Ghost of Hollywood? Check out our website at theghostofhollywood.com for all the newest episodes and updates.
And don't forget to listen every other Friday live on KBOO 90.7 FM Portland. If you're not local, you can also find us live on KBOO.FM. And while you're there, please consider donating to Portland's very own listener power.
Hello and welcome to Pathways, where you are invited to join me for a visit with leaders in personal development and cultural evolution. This is your host, Paul O'Brien. Writing can be a wonderful path of self-exploration, especially in the case of memoir writing. But it can also feel overwhelming to know where to begin, how to stick with it, or what to write. According to today's guest, writing a memoir can change the way you see your life. He emphasizes the importance of self-awareness and the need for dealing with difficult material that actually alters the writer in the process, resulting in significant growth of the soul. Our guest is Alan Hunter, author of the book, Write Your Memoir, The Soul Work of Telling Your Story. Alan has a doctoral degree in English literature from Oxford University. He's been a professor of literature at Curry College and has also taught at Boston University and Bay Path University. He has spent 30 years exploring the way literature has been vital in helping us explain ourselves to ourselves. He now has his own coaching practice, and he lives in the state of Massachusetts. Well, hello, Alan, and welcome to the Pathway Show.
Well, hello, Paul, and thank you for inviting me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, let's start out with the obvious question. What's the difference between a memoir and an autobiography?
An autobiography is something that starts on the day you were born and finishes up to the present moment. And so it covers the whole of one's life in all the details. And that's wonderful if you are Elvis or somebody famous. That may be extremely educational to the folks who are reading it. A memoir, on the other hand, is a segment of one's life, perhaps only a few months, that you feel is somehow important. And some people have written 4 or 5 memoirs of their life, focusing on the different aspects of change. So a memoir is much more compact. And sometimes people will look at their lives and say, you know, what really changed in my life is when I served in the military, when I went to China, and by focusing on that, looking forwards and backwards, one begins to value the change that one went through. And that is a pathway, and it's good that this program is called Pathways, that is a pathway towards a deeper understanding of how we become who we are, rather than some of us just sort of blundering through life.
So it has some psychotherapeutic value. Is that why you know, I get the feeling in your book, I'm not sure whether you come right out and say it, but your book, Writing Your Memoir, I get the feeling that you encourage everybody to write a memoir, that you think it's a good idea for everybody. Is that true?
Yes, I do. I've counseled people on many occasions with talk therapy, and talk is cheap. And sometimes people come away having done a lot of talking without a full awareness of what it is they've said. Now, if you get them to write it down, sometimes they'll look at it and say, wow, did I really write that? I did, it's here. Wow, is that how it really happened? And by slowing us down from the talk stream, where we sometimes go on automatic pilot, it's possible to get anybody to focus down and say, oh, I need to understand what I'm saying here a little bit more thoroughly. And so that's why writing is so useful, I find.
You know, I've written a couple books, and it was like some of the hardest things I've ever done. It's like, you know, it seems like writing is a two-edged sword, because it's so much work, and it kind of throttles your thinking a little bit, because, you know, we can't type or write as fast as we can think. And I'm wondering, what is your attitude towards using technologies to solve that problem? Like, for instance, I've been lately dictating stuff, and there's an app, you know, that you can get where it transcribes dictation, and then you can take that and you can run that through ChatGPT and have it punctuate everything and create paragraphs. And so, you know, it seems to me that what is your attitude about with the technology that people should bring to the writing process itself?
Well, technology is wonderful. It really is great. And it's only a first step. When you've got the words on the page, it's really, really useful to look back and say, what have I been saying? What have I written?
Right.
And reflect as to, well, is that accurate? Is that really the way it was? Would anyone dispute the fact that I said this happened? And that, you see, is part of the slowing down process that I believe is the next step after using the technology.
Yeah.
People often love to use...
You're not a traditionalist in the sense that you should use the pen and paper technology.
No, not at all. I ask people how they feel most comfortable. Mm-hmm. And for some people, it really is the old-fashioned fountain pen and, you know, finding the book that they like and writing on this beautiful, creamy paper. For other people, that terrifies them. Oh, no, you know, this beautiful page, what am I going to do? In fact, I have one gentleman who said that the only way he could ever write was if he took old computer printouts with one blank sheet on one blank side, and he used the blank side of the scrap paper, because then, he said, he was free to make mistakes and cross things out.
And he wasn't going to waste any paper.
He wasn't going to waste any paper. And guess what? It liberated him to write exactly as he needed to. I have a lot of techniques in the book that suggest, here are some ways you can do this. If this works for you, do it. If it doesn't, try something else. Right. Get the word down.
You say that we owe it to others to tell our stories. Why do you say that?
Well, unless we are really hermits living in a cave in the Himalayas, we're going to be interacting with other people. And when we interact with other people, we want to be interacting from the best part of ourselves. And that can only come through understanding. Memoir is a great pathway to understanding. One of the examples I give in the book, at the start of the book, is with my own father, who was heavily PTSD traumatized. That's a tautology, but he suffered, and he would not talk about his early life. He would not talk about it. And I said, Dad, you know, I love you, Dad, and don't understand anything about you because you never give me a context. And so for our relationship, and for his relationship actually with my mother and his relationship with my siblings and it was absolutely essential that he took the time to realize where he was blocked. And it took him a long time because he was quite ill and quite old when he started. But here's the point. It brought him to what I consider to be a place of greater peace and greater understanding. Uh-huh. He wasn't waking up in the middle of the night shouting.
Do you think everybody has a story worth telling?
Yes. Okay. Yes, I think every story is worth telling. Not every story is going to be the sort of thing that sells a million copies on Amazon. But they're all worth telling because we all are likely to say to ourselves at some point, how did I get here? What has brought me here? And we have the choice to go, oh, well, it's all just random.
Well, it seems to me that, you know, it helps if you have sufficient self-esteem. You know, you're not going to want to tell your story if you're not feeling good about it or about yourself. And what is it? This brings up the whole topic of soul work, which is the subtitle of your book, The Soul Work of Telling Your Story. Well, what do you mean by that?
Well, soul work is about the best term I could come up with. Not everybody believes in the soul, for instance. But many people do, and most of us believe that we have an inner something that makes us alive and pay attention and able to fall in love, to have friendships, to do things that are altruistic. Most of us know we've got that. And I call that the soul. You could call it the psyche. You could call it whatever you like.
Right.
For me, it is our job to become aware of what this force is inside us that guides us through our life, whether we like it or not. You can say it's the unconscious. Well, great. But if you don't know what your unconscious is doing, it will lead you sometimes to do some very strange things.
Now, you talk in the book about how the actual process of writing a memoir or tackling the writing of a memoir can change a person's point of view as the writing actually changes the author as the writing takes place. Can you speak to that?
Yes, I can. Again, another example, I mentioned my father just now. It certainly changed him. I worked with a prisoner in the Massachusetts jails. We met in the old electric chair room with the remains of the hookup on the wall. And he had sold his life story to Paramount Pictures. The movie's never been made, but that was neither our doing nor anyone else's, I guess. And in the course of our work together, he began to say things like, wow, I never looked at my life before. I can't believe I did that. I can't believe this is my life. He told me things he wasn't proud of. He told me things that really were rather alarming. And in the course of that, it became part of what I can only describe as the reconstitution of his moral self. He rehabilitated himself, you might say. Well, there were other things involved as well. He took courses in the school. He began to open his mind. He's out now after 27 years, I think. He's leading a very productive and honest and decent life. He's married. He has a stepchild. He's turned his life around. And he himself will say, you know, if I hadn't written that story, originally from the point of view of making money, but if I hadn't written that story, I couldn't have got to where I am now.
Well, so, you point out that every story has to have a beginning, a middle, and an end. And of course, it's not an autobiography, so it's not the end of the lifetime, but it's the end of whatever the narrative is. It seems to me that, I mean, is it important to have an ending in mind from the very beginning? You know, do you need to know where you want to land? Because if you have a story like that prisoner, it's that you don't feel good about, it's kind of hard to motivate yourself. I know you say it's not about pride. It's not about making yourself look good. It's about finding out what's true. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, that's like journaling, right? Is anybody else going to want to read that, particularly if it's depressing?
Very good question. I don't know every individual's life. I do know that when we journal, we sometimes just scrape over the surface. When we use the techniques in my book, it gives an opportunity to go deeper so we can find out our own essential honesty.
Right.
Sometimes we lie to ourselves about what our lives have been. And so, yes, to return to the earliest part of your question, there is a narrative arc that we all have in mind. A beginning, here I was doing this, and then there was some sort of crisis, and then there was a result, which is not necessarily an end, but it is a change. Okay. Our lives are made up of those moments. I sometimes ask my counselees and my writing people, I say, as a first exercise, I say, focus on a moment when you realized that something had changed. And they say, oh, you know, it's the day my father left, or the day my mother hanged herself, or, you know, or whatever it is. These are two actual examples. And I say, okay, there's a before, there's a beginning, what was, there's the shock of the moment, and then there's the next bit. What do I do now? Which is usually about drawing on one's own inner resources. That's a beginning, a middle, and an end. That's a narrative arc.
Now, what do you think, what should be the motivation of somebody who decides, well, okay, I'm going to write a memoir. You know, I think most people won't write a memoir unless they think there's something very interesting about the changes they've been through or the story of their life. But what generally should be the motivation? Because should a person worry about whether it's ever going to be published or not? You know, normally people write a book and they're hoping, you know, that somebody's going to pick it up and promote it and publish it. But should they care about that in this case?
I think that worrying about how many dollars you're going to make from your life story is putting the cart before the horse. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes you don't know until you've written your life story whether there's any commercial value to it. There's always going to be personal value. Some right. people write because they say, I want my family to know this. I want right. my kids, my grandkids, my great-grandkids to know something about this, who I am, what it was like to be me, how I got here. Right. So there's always the personal value. And as I say, the writing will change us. I've done this so many times with so many writers, and they've always come to a newer, better place of understanding than they started with. You can tell from the titles they can turn up with. I'm going to call my story, you know, How I Overcame Everything. Or, and yeah, maybe they did, but maybe the story behind that is about how I was helped by certain people, by certain events, to overcome something, to discover something new. Sometimes people say, well, you know, I can't write my story because I'm going to offend so many people. I can't say how what a brute my father, mother, aunt, cousin was. They'll sue me. And I say to that, you know, when you've written the story, you probably won't feel the same about these people. Because one of the big things about writing the story is it helps to grow compassion. Compassion for yourself. You were doing the best you could at the time. Compassion for others. People who hurt you were suffering themselves and perhaps were not terribly aware of it. And compassion for all the other folks out there who have suffered similarly.
Right.
Because you be the only person.
Right. Now you talk, I mean, you promote discipline in your book as your counsel to people who want to get started in, you know, which involves daily writing. Of at least 15 minutes, or if not more. How much should a new writer expect to produce every day?
I think 15 minutes is a good place to start. I tell my people, I say, sit down at a place you like with your favorite way of writing, a computer, a phone, a piece of paper, a notebook, and give yourself 15 minutes there. Even if nothing happens, give yourself 15 minutes and try to do that, you know, 4 or 5 times a week. Every day is nice, but, you know, you're allowed a day off. 15 minutes. And what you'll discover is that you will train your unconscious, which is where all real change happens. You'll train your unconscious to say to itself, oh, it's okay. We've nothing to hide here. We're just doing a little writing. And that's when we open up, and that's when memories that we've long suppressed tend to bubble to the surface. And when they start bubbling, they come in a bit of a rush, which is why I always tell people, you know, have a piece of paper and a pencil ready, because it may overwhelm you. Have your phone ready if you're driving the car, because when we're driving the car, our conscious mind tends to go a little on remote autopilot,
right?
And the memories bubble up, and you don't want to get into a crash because you're trying to write it down. So you pick up your phone, press the dictate button, and say the time when. And then when you get back to your desk, you can write about that. But without that initial investment, like going to the gym, you know, you just have to go to the gym the first day. You don't have to do anything, and the
right.
next day. You go for the same, and you lift a few weights. And the next day you say, well, I'll try that machine over there. And gradually, 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 your body says, oh, this isn't so bad. I can cope with this.
Yeah.
And become the fit and healthy person you want to be in the gym. Exactly the same thing happens with writing.
So in terms of like having a successful process in this writing project, how important is coming up with a title?
Oh, a title will change. I think coming up with a title is a really good idea to begin with. And then you'll recognize that the title, because the content will change, the title has to change as well. But it's not a bad idea to start with a title. Mm-hmm. I have a little technique that was suggested to me by Bob Atwan, who was a very skilled memoirist and editor. And he said, if you really want to visualize your book, find a book that looks roughly like the one that you hope to finish. Cover it with white paper or whatever, and then draw a design on it with your title and your name, and then look at it. And this will tell you, it'll tell your unconscious that this is going to happen. Here it is, it's going to happen. The unconscious is a powerful, powerful tool. It can be, quote, fooled, but it can also be worked with. And so having a title at that point can be very, very useful.
You know, you have so many great practical tips in this, in your book about writing your memoir. It's amazing. You know, what about endings? How do you know when to stop?
One of the things I say in the book is that the story will actually tell you when it's complete. And this is not something you can predict. You can't sit and think about it, you know, months in advance and say, I want to end here, because that feeling may shift. So you will work through it and you'll get to a point that I can only describe as understanding. I spoke about how it grows compassion, it grows understanding, and you will realize, oh, I've reached a natural pausing point. And that's when you know I've done the work that I need to do.
You know, you write, where you choose to end is less important than the mood in which you choose to close your memoir. The mood I most frequently encounter is one that is best described as gratitude.
Yes.
I suppose gratitude and understanding go together.
Well, they do, but gratitude is such a powerful word. And when we really feel gratitude, as opposed to just saying, well, you know, thanks very much, when we really feel gratitude, it is a profound appreciation of what it means to be alive. Even if you're not the most famous person on the planet,
right,
you've been given this wonderful experience, and it's gratitude.
How important is a happy ending? You know, I can imagine somebody, let's just say somebody's an addict, or they've got an eating disorder, or they're addicted to some kind of drugs or alcohol or whatever, and they haven't recovered yet, and they're not that confident that they're going to recover. So it's kind of hard for them to write their memoir about their struggle if they can't see the rainbow at the end of the day. So, what's your advice about that?
Again, you know, one of the part of the recovery program, every recovery program, is to say, in effect, one day at a time, I'm recovered today. I'm going to try my best tomorrow, but I'm just focusing on today. That's a powerful statement right there. That's a happy ending, which isn't really yet an ending because the struggle continues. But knowing that you can do one day at a time, that you're in a better place than you were, I would consider that to be a pretty happy ending.
I suppose if somebody lacks the confidence in order to put themselves on a program of recovery, they're probably not going to have the confidence to write their story.
Well, that's true. That is absolutely true. They're not going to have the confidence to continue their story, let's put it that way.
Now, you say the process of writing a memoir takes you through six stages, which can be characterized by archetypes. And I found that to be very interesting. But then later in the book, you expound on the magician archetype. And what's special about the magician archetype from a memoir writing point of view?
Yeah, well, the magician archetype is the highest archetype on the six that I suggest. It's where we all hope to arrive. And the magician doesn't tell you how to live your life. The magician, as it were, steps back like the team coach and says, it's up to you what you take from this. and leaves it open to us to be our own, as it were, guides at this point. A magician, apart from a stage magician where they wave a wand and a rabbit comes out of a hat, right, that's great, but that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the person who can change someone else's energy.
Right.
So that's the team coach. A good coach can take a losing team and turn it into solid gold. And when that coach leaves, often the team will collapse. The Red Sox seem to be doing exactly that right now.
they need Ted Lasso, I think.
We need someone. But Ted Lasso, you see, there's an example. If you get the right, shall we say, sense of allowing people to let the magic work within them, the reader will have read the story and go, I get it now.
Right.
The reader will change themselves, just as the writer, in the process of writing, will have been able to change his or her viewpoints to something productive.
You know, we're just about out of time here, and I want to, what is the correlation between this book, which is so informative, and I mean, it's quite a textbook. Does it represent what you teach people in some of your training events or in your counseling practice?
Yes, it does. I work with memoir writing. I also work with literature, and I work, of all things, with folk tales as well, because there's a lot of wisdom in some of these.
Right.
And, you know, it's never one size fits everybody. We have to have a variety of techniques we can dip into at a moment's notice. Visualizations. Again, every different form of literature can give us something. And sometimes people will just say, you know, this is my favorite book. And that gives us a way in.
Well, Alan, thank you for being on the show. We've run out of time. There's so much more we could explore. We've barely scratched the surface of the content of your book and the content of your work. And I just want to appreciate you for being on the show today.
Paul, thank you for inviting me. It's been a pleasure.
And I want to tell our listeners about your website, where they can find out what kind of events you might have coming or what kind of services you offer, as well as the books that you've written. And that's www.alanhunter.net. Alan Hunter, one word, spelled ALLANHUNTER.net. Now, for those who may have tuned into Pathways late, this is your host, Paul O'Brien, author of Intuitive Intelligence, a book that shares the theme of Pathways, which is personal and cultural evolution. Now, don't worry, you can play and share this interview whenever you want via the internet or as a free podcast, and I'll tell you how in a minute. Today, we've been visiting with Alan Hunter, author of Write Your Memoir, The Soul Work of Telling Your Story, a very inspiring and practical book that, as Alan pointed out in our interview today, really applies to everybody. And I want to say thank you to all of our listeners for tuning into Pathways, which is broadcast and streamed on the internet at www.kboo.fm every Sunday morning at 8:30 USA Pacific time. And even better, podcasts of today's show, which you can listen to and forward to others, are available for free at divination.com. That's spelled divination.com, as well as via iTunes, Paulo's YouTube channel, and other free podcast servers. This is Paul O'Brien reminding you to tell your friends about Pathways Radio and podcasts. And thanks again to Alan Hunter and to all of you listeners for tuning in and being a part of the Pathways conversation.
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM in the Portland area and all over the world at kboo.fm.
Slip a bookmark into your paperback and listen to KBOO for interviews with your favorite fiction and nonfiction writers. Between the Covers airs Thursdays from 11 to 11:30 a.m. here on KBOO 90.7 FM.
On the next episode of Voices for the Animals, we'll look into the case of a goat, a girl, and the rise of more compassionate and humane alternatives to 4-H agricultural programs. We'll be speaking with Danielle Hanisch, Executive Director of LEAP, Leaders for Ethics, Animals, and the Planet. It's a program that offers students the farm animal care experience and opportunities of 4-H without the selling of those animals for slaughter, which can traumatize many kids.
These kids were, 14, 15, 16 years old and just realizing